This is a podcast from the people behind the world's longest running football fans podcast, The Celtic Underground. You can subscribe and listen anywhere that you get your podcasts. You can have a free subscription where this lands straight in your email inbox, and you can go to theCelticUnderground.substack.com. You can also have a paid subscription where you get some additional content, including the In Conversation podcast every week end and the Celtic Written, which is basically a rehash of the E-Tim's Rumour Mill, oops, from Glen Tintin from years ago. Anyway, this is me, Harry Brady, with this week's podcast. So it's I've lost track of time, about an hour.
9:30.
It's about an hour since the Champions League debacle 2025-26 ended. And I'm joined by Andrew Smith, and you heard the dulcet tones of Eddie Pearson there. So I'm going to go straight into it. Andrew, you just had a great description of the game. What was it?
50 Shades of Shite. Do you know what it reminds me of? And I'm rehashing my old hits here. When Celtic played the Champions League qualifier against Dynamo Zagreb, and I come back on the flight overnight, had to go in. It was practically straight into the Evening Times office to write my report, my follow-up report. And I always remember my intro because somebody said they liked it. I said, "Let the recriminations begin and let not a soul be spared." That's where we are tonight. That's the low point of Celtic's European history. The low point, 210 minutes against the side ranked 311th, side that never was one group campaign, a Conference League 3 years ago, didn't win a single game. 39th ranked nation out of the 54 Kazakhstan are. This is as bad as it gets. And
same coefficient as Crusaders.
What's that, sorry?
We've got the same coefficient as Crusaders.
Same coefficient as Crusaders. Yeah. Although, God, I remember one time Celtic nearly lost to... They struggled against Shamrock Rovers and all that. Mm-hmm. Mind you, these teams are a lot better now, but nah, that's the low point. That's the low point of... Even you can forget individually, like everything that happened in the 10 in a row debacle or the chasing 10 debacle. You had a chance. You get two chances, really, to put it right. And as I said to you earlier on, like that second leg made the first leg look like fucking 1970 World Cup final. Honest to God, man. Do you know what it kept reminding me of? Do you know, I know we like our 70s film references because we're that old, but you know Marathon Man?
Yes.
When Laurence Olivier is drilling all those holes in his teeth. That's what that 135 minutes, I think it probably took. That's what it felt like. I was like, I was like Dustin Hoffman with Marathon Man.
In that, Dustin Hoffman being a method actor goes running round so he looks like he's just done a run. And Laurence Olivier said to him, apparently, "Just act, dear boy."
Yeah. Act. He said, "What's my motivation for this scene?" He says, "Acting, dear boy, acting."
Yeah, so maybe we should have just fucking played. Just play, dear boy. Just play instead of...
Yeah. I was shocking the first touch of the play. I mean, I know it was obviously a terrible surface and they were slipping all over the place and all that. But they seemed to be the first touch deserted practically everybody. Actually, Kobe Donovan, when he came on, was the first guy who looked as if he'd a secure touch.
So, Eddie, it had all the hallmarks of Celtic being shite in Europe, bingo. We had the board not backing the manager so that we've not got the quality up front. We've got even the decent players, as Andrew's just said, having an inability to just control a pass and make a pass and being shit and not playing like we play every week. We're playing against a team that you think, if you played every week in the Premier League, you'd be 2-3 places minimum below us in the league. And then we also had the defensive mix-up that almost resulted in, actually, to not hit the European shite bingo, It didn't result in a goal, but I thought it would do. I thought, oh, that's magic. That is just everything about this game. So I think we will probably have chunks of this that if people listen in isolation, they'll say, ah, but it's not all their fault. And I think that gets to Andrew's point of let the recriminations begin and nobody's going to be spared. So where do your recriminations start, Eddie?
I suppose the first thing I should do is I should apologise for the incredibly aggressive way I said 9:30 at the start of this, because what was going through my head was, why are we doing this? Why are we putting ourselves through this right now? And why are other people wanting to listen to it? The masochistic tendencies of the post-depressive game podcast across all football, not just us. What is it we're wanting out of this, to be honest? How is this going to make things in any way better for anybody by listening to us and wallowing in our own sorrows and depression?
Because as you said the other day, misery loves company.
Misery does love company, but look at the company I've got. I'm no 100% convinced.
You're no miserable enough.
Very, very true. The thing about us is, why are we surprised? Why are we surprised at all? As soon as we hit qualifiers, we don't qualify for the Champions League based on qualifiers. Why do we not qualify for the Champions League based on qualifiers? Because we have got an incredibly strategic, forward-thinking board who decide we don't spend money for qualifiers in case we lose them. And they've not been wrong yet. True. And I think that's the thing we need to give them a lot of credit for. They have not been, they've backed the winning horse every time when it comes to why spend money on qualifiers, because we're not getting a Champions League. So let's not spend that Champions League money until we've got it. And by God, they've been wise this season, because we've not got it and they've not spent it.
I don't even think they're that strategic.
I refuse to accept they are sitting in the boardroom just now, grossly incompetent, not knowing what they're doing, not knowing what door to come in or come out of. They're hiding underneath their desks. I refuse to accept that. You don't get a £20,000 education to end up not knowing what you're doing like that. They know exactly what they're doing. This is a stroke of genius. Think of the money they've saved us. Imagine we had spent money on a £10 million striker. Imagine we had spent £7 million on a right winger or a left winger or a centre half or a midfielder. Imagine we'd spent all that money. We'd be looking bloody stupid right now, wouldn't we? Well, we're not looking stupid. We've done exactly the right thing. And let's not forget that. Hats off. Three cheers for the Celtic board. Hip hip. I'll go myself then, okay. Right. But let's face it, they knew exactly what they were doing. We've still got all that money in the bank that we can go in and look at it whenever we want. It's all right, we need to give some of it to corporation tax and all stuff. But we're going to look at it whenever we want. We've not damaged the share price in any way with this. I think you've been far too negative here, boys. I really do. I think you've got to think positive about this. This is
You do remember we were playing FC Carat, and from the bench, Celtic brought on £20 million worth of players that are not even 12 months in the door. They had £20 million worth of players to bring off their bench. What did Carat have? Well, their record signing is a £290,000. Their record signing, £290,000. In the last three transfer windows, Carat have spent £280,000 to Celtic's £46 million. If you think it's on the Celtic board alone, no one should escape censure over this. No one should escape censure. But I think actually, in the context, I think what we're really bad at doing, or in my humble opinion, football supporters are doing, is compartmentalising. Now, the board aren't fit for purpose. The recruitment strategy isn't fit for purpose. This summer window was abject. They should have had a striker in. But this whole idea that, oh, you're gambling. Well, you could have brought the striker in. All these things can be true. And at the same time, what can be true is that this is on Rodgers and the players. This is absolutely on Rodgers and the players in this kind of narrow context of who they were playing, the circumstances surrounding it, it's on Rodgers and the players. Because if you don't have enough in that squad to beat an FC Karat, then you need to get rid of the whole. They should have brought in 14 players this window, because clearly that's what you need. Because none of them are good enough.
But Andrew, we've seen better teams than this do exactly the same thing in Champions League qualifiers.
Aye, but no against FC Karat.
I'm not disagreeing with that, but we've played some crap that have got through ahead of us, right? I'm not disagreeing that this is a particularly bad one, right? And you're right in what you say, this is one of the worst. But our team always panic when it comes to this qualifier.
Yeah,
they always panic. They panic in the way that Rangers panic domestically when they go maybe 3 points within getting joint top with us. We don't have the bottle to get us through. The fear of failure paralyzes them in these games.
Does.
And that's what that we saw it last Wednesday, and we saw it again tonight. They are better players than they showed there. Callum McGregor, I love Callum McGregor. Callum McGregor was terrible there tonight. Carter Vickers was terrible there tonight. Absolutely shocking performances from two of the mainstays in the team over the last, you know, certainly almost the last decade for McGregor, the last few years for Carter Vickers. But big name players never did it for us tonight, because the fear, the consequences overwhelms them. And it's like Rangers in domestic football. The consequences are getting close overwhelms them, and they capitulate because they don't have the psychological strength to get us through those games. That's the only explanation I can come up with for the way that this has happened repeatedly over the last decade. We've won everything domestically, and we've failed consistently when push comes to shove to compete in Europe. When we get a free pass to the Champions League, aye, well and good. But when we have to compete to get there, when we should be good enough, we're watching Bodo Glimt absolutely smash a German team to get through. We are good enough to do it. It's in our heads.
Yeah, but the players change and the manager changes. But this situation doesn't seem to change. Do you remember when Dermot Desmond say was going to hire a psychologist after they lost to Ferencvaros? Because he said there was I think it was the interview he gave in The Athletic.
But it was too expensive and he had two, so they never got him in. Is that what happened?
He hired a trainee psychologist.
He knew a guy who knew a guy who'd once given somebody advice in a pub, and he got him in instead. Aye?
Yeah, yeah. He got the guy. It was actually just started his university course to be a psychologist.
He was good at going, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, how do you feel about that? But couldn't he actually give any advice? Aye?
He bought an actor who'd played a psychologist in a sitcom.
It's cultural within the club. Brendan mentioned it last time round, that the culture within the club is our target is to get there. Therefore, the game to get there is the cup final. And that's the institutionalised culture of the club. That then creates two things, for my mind. It creates the performance of tonight where, I'd love to take a fucking baseball bat to Niger and my metaphorical Niger and Maeda and say to them, see, when everybody's playing shit, stop doing fucking fancy flicks. Just get the ball under control and play it. We start doing stuff that we never do in any game. We never do it. And Brendan's point last time, and this is not also Brendan's great, I think this summarises the institutionalised culture within the club. That makes this game a cup final and all the nerves that are associated with it. It then means once we get there, last season's the unique thing. Because his reason was that's why we're shit when we get there. Because, well, we've won the cup final just by getting here. And there's no mentality around the concept of we're a last 16 Champions League team. We don't have that superior mentality that's what we are. And so it starts on at this stage of game and feeds through.
If you do consider it a cup final, that's the last three cup finals Celtic have been penalty shootouts. I think that must be the first time they've had three penalty shootouts in their history inside 12 months, unless somebody can correct me. We need Matthew Hail Hail History Mar on. Pretty sure they've never had three penalty shootouts in the space of 12 months.
And it looked like for the second time in a row, we hadn't prepped for penalties.
That's what my 15-year-old said to me. He says, I don't think they've been practicing penalties. And they had been practicing penalties. Again, they'd looked at it. They'd probably looked at the cup final penalties, if you look at it, Cara. Because again, like Aberdeen, hitting them high.
Yeah.
Hitting them high.
Well, but I mean, to be fair, that's a good place to hit any penalty, because keepers are, in those situations, in general, going to dive one way or the other. So if you can manage to hit it high down the middle.
People don't. I mean, it's not the typical thing to do. I mean, when we had Chris Commons on, remember, he said he always hit them high and he scored.
What did you think of Engels being the third one rather than the first or the last? Do you know, like, just as your designated penalty taker, admittedly, he's no in starting games. It was strange to drop him into the middle of that. Did you not think so?
Based on the, God, I can't remember his name, the Norwegian guy that we did the podcast with, you would have so Ida's also a penalty taker. So you have Ida or Engels first, and you have one of them, and you have the other one fourth or fifth. And I wondered whether Engels had been moved forward one spot
because
two were missed.
No, surely you need to name what your five penalty takers are before anybody hits any of them. I would assume, but
I think you name them. I don't know if you need to name them in order. You just need to tell the ref who's taking them.
Okay, don't know. Can't. No point arguing that, because I don't know that point. But see, given the fact that Dyson misses that sitter, and he missed the sitter last week, and he missed the one in the cup final, and he missed the one at Ibrox, I wasn't dead confident when he stepped up to do the fifth one, I must be honest.
I didn't even get excited when he was clean through in the last minute, because I knew he'd miss it.
Well, you're taking absolutely no joy at all. I mean, I got excited when he got through. I thought, well, I've got a chance here.
I didn't.
I was off my couch.
Because I thought...
That's very St. Anthony-esque of you.
No, I actually thought he's running from the halfway line with the thought in his head, I can't miss this one. He'd not be human if he wasn't thinking, because all of us would do that. If you'd missed the one, you know, it's not just us that remember the ones he's missed recently. He'll remember them. So he's running through and it'll be in his head. And that's why this was the first one that he tried to lift. All the others, he'd hit them low and straight at the keeper. This one, he tried to lift it.
I thought tonight he looked...
By Jiminy, did he lift it?
I thought tonight he looked very Dyson Maeda-esque. That wee spell where he was batting the goals in, that's the blip. And you said that in the last podcast, Andrew. That's the blip. That unpredictability in terms of being able to screen by guys and hit the ball out for a throw-in or a by kick or a great cross or whatever. That's the Dyson we're used to. This idea of we need to play this guy through the middle and he's fantastic and stuff. He was for that wee spell, but...
He was.
This is him, I think. I think this is much more familiar.
Yeah,
you know, and that unpredictability. Yeah. That's why we've got him.
The old you used the old Mark Warburton line. He's returned to the mean, because Mark Warburton. That's what he said when Celtic were 24 points shy in the second Rodgers season as they from their first one, and he said they've returned to the mean. I knew that I was up against something that wasn't going to last. You can't always get 106 points, can you? But Dyson isn't always going to score 15 goals in 14 games. They might not score 15 goals in 40 games now.
do you like the look of a midfield that we've started the season with?
No.
You know, I mean, like Engels is on the bench. You spoke about £20 million of talent coming on, and now when the two of them come on, I said exactly the same. That's £20 million of player coming on there. That's fantastic. I know Engels isn't everybody's cup of tea, but a midfield looked better last season than it does this season. What is it he's seeing and Negrin ahead of Engels at the moment? And I don't want to...
A goal threat. An open play goal threat.
We're playing him in the wrong position to get the best out of him then, if that's the case. I mean, I know he scored two on Saturday, but I'm just not seeing the logic in it at the moment. Maybe Engels has been terrible in training and that's why he's doing it. But I don't think we look as good in the middle of the park as we did last season.
It's the mix isn't right, but maybe even last season a lot of times it didn't feel right either. The midfield, you can say what you like about wingers and strikers and all that, but there's no, like, she nailed Celtic. She nailed us, the co-commentator. What was her name again? The double-barrel surname. She's watching the kind of tippy-tappy, the kind of horseshoe of death across the back and all that. She's saying, it's all very well doing, you know, playing that way if there's some kind of purpose to it, but there's no purpose to Celtic's passing. Then she said she was going on about that later on, going on about the lack of creativity. You could not deny any of that.
I did think that both those commentators were bored out of their box trying to reduce some. I've rarely heard more hacked off commentary. And, you know, all right, okay, here we are. You know, I thought they were going to start talking about the head for their dinner last night to try and make it a bit interesting. I almost felt sorry for them. They did. They weren't interested in the Scottish team for a start. We didn't give them anything to talk about.
You didn't know any of the players. Neither side, they'd done any research on the players, really. No. I mean, John Champion's okay, but at one point he said, this is a grind. It's like, tell us about it, John. What do you think we feel?
At least we support one of the teams involved. He was just bringing up his money.
Honest to God, that's one of the poorest games of football at any level.
That was a factor as well. Well, even if you're a Celtic fan, you're not a Celtic fan. That was a rubbish match to watch, wasn't it? There was no quality in that whatsoever for either team. There was nobody who thought, but that guy's trying something and it's just not really working for him there. He's a bit unlucky. Both teams were garbage. Absolutely garbage.
Utter garbage. Utter garbage. You know, and so if you blame the board, I get Andrew's point about, aye, but that squad should still be good enough. Equally, but we knew exactly what was wrong with the team. At the end of last season, the way they lost to Aberdeen and the way they'd lost to Rangers, we knew what was wrong with the team, and the board hadn't brought the players in to fix it. So
I see
it's two ways. We needed a winger at last winter. The manager said he needed a winger, and we lost a striker and gained a winger. So we now needed a striker because we got the winger in and we lost the striker. Since then, that winger's been out since the last game of the season injured, and he's going to be out until 2026. And we sold Kuhn. So we went into that window needing a winger, and regardless of, you know, ignore the fact, for a moment, ignore the fact that Jota came in, and so we got the winger. But the fact is he's injured. So approaching these Champions League games, at the bit of the park that's going to fucking win the Champions League game, because that's where the creativity is. That's where the goals are going to come from. We sold our best striker, the other winger, and, well, Jota came in and out. So effectively, we are three players of quality down in the one place of the pitch that's going to win the game. So from that perspective, if Dermot Desmond wants to phone me up, I'll have a whip round and we can tell him to fuck off. Because he is 100% responsible for the strategy of the club around not signing players. It is absolutely 100% his decision-making to be some sort of Billy Big Balls, Donald Trump light. I do deals at the end of the window. We are probably going to bring in 3-4 players. Regardless of losing tonight, we are still probably going to bring in 3-4 players because he's fucking magic and licks his balls at night to show everybody how wonderful he is, that he does brilliant deals in the last week of the transfer window. Well, that's fucking waste of time because we're out.
Yeah.
And even if he signs the players, our biggest, we could fucking bury them at the weekend. Even if we signed fucking Maradona, Messi and Ronaldo tonight, they're not going to be playing on Sunday. Doesn't fucking matter who we sign, because we're not going to have them ready for Sunday because the team's not back and training until Friday. The manager's not going to stick whoever we sign straight into the team. So being Billy Big Balls and aren't I great negotiating at the end of the window, that's, you know, it's like loading a shotgun, pointing at your foot and then complaining because somebody's fucking just pulled the trigger.
And the other aspect, and this is what, There's a psychological element as well, because the climate of negativity around the club, it's toxic and it seeps.
And they've created it. They have 100% created it.
They created it.
And the other thing in all of this,
as much as the players, because this whole idea you're gambling, well, you gamble when you sign players anyway. who's to say the players are any going to be any good? Who's to say in their first three or four games they're going to do anything? You know, the one I always bring up is like Celtic played Karagandy. What the one time when they beat a Kazakhstan team, what happened out there? They lost 2-0, and Virgil van Dijk was so poor in his first appearance, he was dropped for Effie Ambrose for the return leg, which Celtic won 3-0. So there was your new signing. To be honest with you, I feel like you need to sign in January if you're playing Champions League qualifiers. You need a full 6 months to
bed in. At the very least, you could sign and give the manager the players for the full transfer, for the full pre-season.
Negrin's there. Tierney's been there.
Negrin's shit.
What's that?
Negrin's shit. I don't know if you noticed this. I came home on Saturday watching, for whatever time it was, the fourth or the fifth time, watching a really bang average guy who's, you know, what would we get if we signed a player in Scotland for £1 million, right? I'm watching a really bang average guy, and I come back and I'm reading online and WhatsApp messages of people telling me night is day and that Negrin and Shin are good players. I'm like utterly flabbergasted. Negrin and Hatate in particular, those two can't play in the same midfield, it looks like, from the games they played.
Yeah, I think there's something in that.
Tonight, you could have this set of circumstances on repeat for about 50 times. The ball comes to Negrin and he loses possession. He either can't even control it.
He shows too much of it,
or he gets it and looks around and turns into the three opposing players, right? Just runs into them, loses the ball. The next bit is the bit that Tosh McKinley used to do 30 years ago, used to do my boxing, or 27 years ago. I've just lost the ball. So I'm going to run after that guy like a headless chicken and just run into him and foul him. And so that's what bugged me most about Negrin. Not that he just couldn't control the ball and pass to a Celtic player. It's the fact that after he lost it, he would then chase the guy down and foul him. Utter unprofessionalism. I mean, that's just because he's not so a bit. That's what not very good players do.
He's so one-paced.
I don't know where
he could ever play out wide anywhere.
I don't know where we play him, right? So I get your point about, because he offers a goal threat, you know, it's been suggested to me, he'll do all right, he'll score 12 goals this season, you know, which is more than Hatate does. But I'm not quite sure where we play him, because he's not a midfielder because he loses possession far too easily. But he's not a winger to play in our system because he's not got the pace. So I can see that there's a player on the pitch that will get us some goals. I can see that because he'll arrive late into the box like he did on Saturday. He'll arrive in, but bear in mind we were playing against a very poor Livingston. He'll arrive in and he'll get some goals, but I'm not quite sure.
Is he an old-fashioned second forward? You know, just off a bigger guy? And nobody plays that type of football anymore?
No, I know.
I'm not even sure he's that good enough. I mean, it's nothing personal against him. I want every Celtic signing to be successful. I've not seen anything that you think, I think he'll come good. Just needs a bit of game time.
His first half hour on Saturday was extraordinarily poor. He lost the ball.
Somebody messaged me because I said online, somebody messaged me and said he was world class. I honestly thought it was like Invasion of the Body Snatchers. While I was driving home, everybody had been possessed by this thing. And I get on and all these WhatsApp messages saying, Shin and Negrin look great, didn't they? If you all phoned each other and said, look, Brian's in the car with his dad, right? We're going to play this really funny joke that we'll pretend the two worst players in the park were really good.
Not one of our groups that we are in. Did anybody use the words world class? So you must have been talking to somebody else because it was.
No, that was online. That was a guy who came back at me on Twitter.
All right. He got 9.3. He got 9.3 in Fort Mob, which is one of the.
Because he scores two goals. That's how people do it. That's just because he scored two goals, so they stick in and give him.
Ludicrous.
You get team of the week as well in the that SPFL thing where they pull a winger out for the third division and they pull a right back out for the second division and they build a team out of it. He was in that as well. he scored two goals. He was in the right place at the right time. They broke that team down. That was a rotten Livingston team. I thought it was a decent enough performance. I was quite happy because it could have been a tricky game. But
I was like you. You know, they got there and it was pretty bog standards with so many of the games of that nature. And you thought, right, maybe they've kind of dusted themselves down from last Wednesday, and then they plunged themselves into more fucking manure.
When I saw the team line, I thought, this isn't so much a message to the board as a suicide note on Saturday. Do you know what I mean? It was like, what is Rodgers thinking of for the team? He said, but it worked. He got a win. And he rested a couple of players in anticipation of this big game tonight, and we saw how well that worked out.
They were still resting by the time the game finished.
I saw a guy say, this is like watching walking football. This is like watching old guys. Yeah. It was so slow.
See, your point, Eddie, about the fear in the players, and I think that's one of the compounding problems. This game, they played with such utter fear that nobody wants to take any risk. So every single pass is the crappier pass. There's no pass. Getting back to your point, I listened to it with the sound off, Andrew, because I couldn't be bothered. There was no purpose to any pass, because to put purpose in a pass involves taking a risk with your pass, and nobody wants to take that risk because nobody wants to be the guy that mucks up that gets us knocked out of Europe. But as a consequence, all of them were the guys that got us knocked out.
I don't think that's unique to the European tie though, because I think that we play a very, very strong possession based game, and it's drilled into the players. Retain possession at all times. To you know, you can't lose a goal if you've got possession of the ball, and obviously that's a philosophy that's taken hold over the last decade and a half across football in a lot of places. Perhaps it's starting to shift a wee bit now, but we are still really strongly wedded to that. But if we're going to do that, we have to be fast and we have to be direct when the time comes. And we do not have a fast winger on the right. We do not have a fast striker that we used to have to be able to get away with playing this game the way we're doing it. And the consequences of that, because we never bought anybody, is that the players that we had, James Forrest, love James Forrest a bit, when he's gliding across the park, is great to see, but he's not fast. He's absolutely not fast. You know, Dyson is fast, but it just wasn't working for him. Yang played like cup final Yang. I thought Yang actually looked not too bad when he played in the left a couple of times. He played like cup final Yang. So if your wingers aren't at it in terms of the way Brendan Rodgers sets his team up, we're in real trouble.
The only half chances they fashioned in that first half, it was through the down the left.
Yang put a ball in for a header. Forrest header straight to the keeper. That was the only thing I can think of in the first half.
The amount of times that we did what we never do, and the ball came to play and he just hoofed it. First half in particular, we had a few of those where people just.
People were hooking. Like, how many times did Cameron Carr-Vickers hook the ball over his shoulder almost? You think, what are you doing?
Liam Scales did an overhead kick when there's nobody within 10 yards of him.
Yep, Carr-Vickers did one as well in the, the second half, but it actually went over towards the corner flag.
Yeah.
And it didn't actually move up, but you thought, my God, you're a bag of nerves. It's a wee bit of sometimes I think that Carr-Vickers. Sometimes these games, he gets a bit fixated on them in his head, and when he plays, sometimes he can be a wee bit too tense. And that's maybe where the OG came from last time. But he didn't look composed at all. There was one bit where the guy ran by him and he was totally all at sea. I thought one of the best centre halves on the park was Dane Murray when he came on. Dane Murray and the boy Donovan didn't do anything wrong when they came on.
Yeah,
it's a low bar, right? But they're the only two I would give
the lowest to. Bar. It's a subterranean bar.
Do you know the other thing about that?
20,000 bars under the sea.
That institutional fear thing that we talked about.
There's something in that.
Which is the other reason why I think sometimes we get a batch of new players in and we actually do play better in these European qualifiers because they've not been institutionalised by that fear. And the longer we stay with the static team, the poorer we become in European games because of that institutionalised fear that comes into it. which is the other reason why
the evidence wouldn't support that, though. Because what the evidence supports is that we don't qualify for the Champions League through the qualification route, regardless.
And that's because the players that I've talked about signing, we sign after we've just been knocked out.
When was the last time Celtic did qualify? I suppose it would have been... when would it have been that it qualified for the Champions League? Did somebody say that they've lost the last five?
Did we not do it under Brendan last time when we
Aye, 2017, was it Rosenborg then?
Yeah, I think it was against Rosenborg, where we had to play with a false nine because we had no striker. Tom Rogic played.
And James Forrest scored the goal, didn't he?
Yeah, James Forrest. We drew 0-0 away, or 0-0 at home and 1-0 away, and James Forrest scored the goal.
So there's a WhatsApp doing the rounds that says 2017 beat Astana in the playoff. Beat by AEK Athens, beat by Cluj, beat by Ferencváros, beat by Midtjylland, and then we had 3 years of direct entry, and then we've been beat again.
The other thing, so Brendan Rodgers, I remember speaking to someone and asking what the difference between Brendan Rodgers and other Celtic managers was, and they said, win, lose, or draw, when you come into training the next day, you would never know what the Celtic result had been at the weekend. Because Brendan has this even, let's just go again. Whereas other managers are, if we've been beaten, they're on a real downer and or really angry the next game. But I wonder, and within that, getting back to AEK, if Brendan's getting really pissed off in the AEK season and in this season that we have not supported him. Whether that even keelness of Brendan isn't quite the same, and the negativity that he feels about the board being shit and getting signings comes across to the team about this is going to be a harder job than it should be. I mean, I know that the senior players are equally pissed off with the lack of quality players coming in to play around them.
But if the fans are shooting sack the board, that's going to have an impact, and that's not a criticism of the fans, but that's going to permeate the club and thinking.
No, I didn't.
And it wasn't everybody. I quite liked it to have been everybody last Wednesday night, to be honest with you, and I'd like to have been more folk Saturday, but the appetite wasn't there for it. But it's there to a degree. That's going to start impacting. You were saying earlier, the general negativity around the club starts to build up in a head of steam that becomes hard to get past.
God help us if they do their usual at Ibrox of recent times.
I'm watching that game and I'm thinking, if I'm a Rangers fan watching this, I'm thinking, might not be as shit as I was expecting on Sunday.
Let's wait until tomorrow's result before we start to try and put ourselves into the mindset of Rangers fans, because if they're as bad again tomorrow as they were last week, they'll still think that we'll beat them.
The only thing is, they're the opposite of us. Like, we flat track bullies and destroy everybody in Scottish football. But play down to the level of teams that we're playing against in Europe, like tonight. They're the opposite. They can't cope in domestic football, but play up above themselves in European football. It's really weird.
Do you know what that makes me think of? Remember Dundee brought in all those players...
Caballero and Manzazzi and all that.
The guy that ended the Caniggia and all that sort of stuff, And whenever they played against Celtic or Rangers, you would think, these guys are fantastic. What are they doing there? And you'd never hear about them again until the next time they played Celtic or they played Rangers. And you're like, these guys are brilliant, because they never gave a bugger in any of the games other than the ones where they thought, I'll get myself in a short window here. I've got a chance of a big move. I'm going to put a shift in. There's a factor in that. They think, this is the level I want to play at. I don't want to play against Ross County. I'm not here. I'm not interested. And you're up to your knees in against Livingston. I want to go on to a bigger stage. I want to get a big move. And the way you get a big move is to perform in a big game. So that might be why they give us a game when we play them ourselves. And that might be why they give other teams a game in Europe. Except for last week, obviously, when they never gave anybody a game. But they're not interested in these wee games. The mentality's not there. They don't want to win for the club. They want to play for themselves. And we're better to do that than in European football. maybe we could do with a couple of players like that based on the way we perform in Europe at the moment.
This is one that's not going to be shaken off. It won't be shaken off for the entire season, this one. When you think about, I mean, there's no Rangers who are going to, well, they are unbeaten, so I suppose they could still be invincibles this season as well, but there's no Rangers charge coming. But then I said there was no problems coming in the Champions League qualifiers.
See earlier today, there was a guy who said, this is a season-defining game for Celtic, right? And I understand why people will say those things. But do you know what will be season-defining? See if we win the league at the end of the year. Because ultimately, that's what we're like. We'll revert to type. We'll see all this. We'll still be annoyed that our performances in Europe. You know, we just rattled off half a dozen different qualifiers that we never get through. We're pissed off for this tonight. But see, we win the league in May. There'll still be thousands of people out at the Tronky. And they'll still say, that, look at us, look how great we are. What would define our season will be whether we win the league or not. And we're as much to blame as anybody else because we will go, right, that's the way it went. As long as we win the league and we beat Rangers.
Well, it's not as long as...
We look at league tables and we go, champions again. That's five, that's six, that's seven, that's eight, that's nine. Whoa, are we going to do it? That's what we'll default to. Because that's, unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on your viewpoint, that's who we are. It's nothing season-defining until we get to the end.
I mean, so out walking the dogs straight after the game, also pissed off.
The dog watched the game as well. The dog gave up in the game. The dog lifts his leg at the side of the telly and piss on your telly because he's watching this.
I know weather forecasters don't make the weather, right? But what they can do is tell me when it's fucking accurate so that 2 minutes after walking out the door when it says 0% chance of rain, it's not fucking bouncing off the ground. Anyway, I was trying to think, is there any positiveness? And of course, I'm getting hit in the head with 10 Sundays now. I know you're going to like that idea, but 10 Sunday games because we've got Thursdays now.
Shit,
with the Europa League.
I forgot about that.
Right.
There's optimism straight away because it's only 8, is it not? It might be 10 if we get through and at a knockout stage.
Well,
maybe there's only a guarantee of 8. That's what I like to see. Moving forward, think positively.
I think we should be, if now that we're in that competition, we should be able to get to the last 8 minimum. That should be our target.
No with this squad, but...
No, I'm just saying as a club, that should be our aspiration. No, it won't. We'll sign. I mean, as I say, Sunday night, I was told between 4 and 5 bodies are going to come in the door and we've already got 2 of them. Well, they're not actually signed until tomorrow or the next day. So we're going to sign 4 or 5 people who are first-team players.
See if you just squint and you look off into the distance, you might just see that horse just making its way straight over that hill there. And do me a favour, once you've seen that, go and shut that door behind me there because and bolt it.
The only plus I could put in it was 2 pluses. If we do that, our coefficient will improve. And then the other plus is Henrik Larsson, Chris Sutton, John Hartson et al. Lost to Helsinki.
They never get put out by Helsinki.
And then ended up going to Seville.
No, but they never lost it. They were talking about it. O'Neill and Petrov were talking about that Bal game.
Bal.
They did lose in Helsinki, but they got a goal, I think. Did they go through an away goal against Helsinki.
Well, they lost to Basel. And then we ended up playing the
And you think that was one of the greatest experiences of your life? So it took what happened tonight to give you one of the greatest experiences of your life. I was getting stick on the chat for suggesting it might be no bad thing because Celtic just aren't equipped to make an impression in the Champions League.
No, there is a part of me that says it wouldn't be the end of the world to have a UEFA Cup run or a Europa League run, as it's called now.
What does it mean longer term, though, without getting that £40 million in? You know, to the structure of the club. Is this why... You know, they keep saying, we're not spending this £100 million, rainy day weather, or the rainy days here, and I was being flippant about, great business acumen. Don't spend yet, just in case. And funnily enough, there you go, all right. But this is why they've not been spending. They've been spending for fear of we hit qualifiers, we might not qualify. So we need to try and sustain the club at the level we want it to be at. We need this 100 million, right? And so instead of speculating, we play cautious, and this is why they're doing it. And now we're back to the Europa League. We're not getting the 40 million in, but we've got money in the bank so we can stay at this level. Or do you think we will downsize?
But that doesn't even hang together, right? They made 124 million turnover last year. I think they made about £20 million profit. So they will make 18 million from being in the Europa League, as opposed to the 38 million from the Champions League. So there's a £20 million shortfall, but it's not a shortfall because they'll still, I bet they still post a profit this next summer or next year. They post a profit for their operations for this season without the Champions League. So this whole rainy day bullshit, you might lose a couple of million, 5 million or something, but it would take you 20 years no getting to the Champions League for it to start affecting the level at which
where it does affect us is the financial fair play. Our wage bill will be too high. UEFA's financial fair play, that's the difference of reducing. I've got it somewhere, I'm desperately trying to find it.
And Aston Villa get fined 5 million for that last year.
Mm-hmm.
Big wows.
And then the second time you do it, that's 25%. The second time it goes to 50%. The third time it goes to 75%. So I don't think we are actually not spending the money to keep it for a rainy day. That's an interpretation that fans have put on it. I really don't think that's the thought process. But I do know that there is a concern. Celtic have presented to UEFA that the way the financial fair play system works makes one game mean either Celtic comfortably make the financial fair play rules or lose the financial fair play rules, and it should be a more gradual process rather than the way that because it's all set up, it couldn't give a shit about the lesser
teams. So you can spend 70% of your turnover on mm-hmm. players, all associated elements to do with your players' signings, wages and such like. But the Celtic spend 70% of their... And I know those earnings...
If
earnings slid down by 20 million, would it be 70%?
Yeah, we will.
I'll need to take your word for it. I'll need to take your word for it. I think it might even be tight.
Yeah, but so they've got a 60... for 20 million next year, though, and everything will be all right.
They've got a £67 million... £67 million wage bill, right? So it will probably be about just over 100 million. Their turnover will be. So it's in that ballpark. It would be in that ballpark. Especially, they're not likely. Do you think they're going to spend the whole of the kind of 20 million they took in this summer, in for transfers?
Well, we've taken in about 30.
30 million in transfer.
Because of Frimpong as well.
Yeah, maybe a bit. No, it's about 20.
30 seems about high. 17 for Kuhn, 5 for Frimpong.
Yeah, four for Frimpong, 16.7 or something for Kuhn, as I saw the other day. And then you had, who was the other one? Who's the other sale that they made a couple of million on? Who else was it?
Hold on a
second. Can't believe I've forgotten. Oh, yeah, was it?
This is tremendous radio.
Burnaby, yep. Was it Burnaby? Burnaby or something, did they? Or yeah, was it Lagerbielka? Lagerbielka?
Couple of million for him.
It was a couple of million for Lagerbielka. So therefore, are you telling me they're going to, whatever these deals are striking the next week or so, well, next 4 or 5 days, they're going to end up spending more than 24 million? No.
No.
So you'll be up on the deal for that. So you make about 100 million, right? You add in £4 million in terms of that you've brought into the club in terms of over your transfer dealings. So you're up to about 105 million and your wage bill's about 67. But so they would still come within the 70%.
Having said all of that, ultimately none of that's really important in the sense that why on earth are we doing this after this has happened? That the whole structure of the club. It's ludicrous that the most important game of the season to get the big bucks. We don't invest. What is the thinking that we're going? I mean, like I talk to a wee man. I says, well, at least we're not going into a qualifier with some young guy for the academy playing at centre half, and then Dan Murray came on. You know, it's every single season we've done this. Why are we not doing our business? Who is thinking that this is a good way to be? Who sees this? And you're saying it's not a strategy, but let's give a benefit of doubt. Who sees this as a logical strategy? Because the evidence all points to the fact that this doesn't work.
And if it's not a strategy, even worse than that, than if it's not a strategy, because it's just gross incompetence. It's a level of dysfunctionality that no self-respecting kind of top-tier wannabe club would be guilty of.
And do any of us think there'll be consequences to this level of incompetence?
No.
No. Well, Desmond's
not going to sack himself, is he?
No. And it doesn't look like he's going to sack the chief executive who does what he's told. There's not going to be any significant changes to the board. No heads will roll for this. This is massive in terms
But then if none of them, if they're all powerless, if they're all kind of genuflecting in his court, then how can they carry the can? You know, and I remember when I was Celtic View editor, and they say, you have to get to a stage where it doesn't matter if Celtic are winning or losing, we'll sell 20,000 copies a week. God, the good old days, eh? Like the last paper I worked for, the Scotsman, sells four or five. But they said, you have to be selling 20,000 copies a week, whether Celtic are winning on the park or losing on the park. I said, I can't. You can't. I said, that'll determine. I said, we are at their mercy. You know, we are at their mercy. So you, in the same way that you can't blame Nicholson or anybody for
what was
failure.
The point in being in that position then? Because all that's happening then is we're paying people not to do the job we're paying them for. If they have no agency.
Hi there, nice to meet you. I'm excited to help you get things done. Let's get started.
That's me, right?
Who's that?
You were slagging Zena for pinging his phone the last time, and that's you. You've got Siri doing all that stuff in the background. Right,
bloody hell!
I am desperately trying to find. The difference
Eddie, I'm
going
to bring in a marching band next week, right? And we can just have...
it's shocking. I'm the only person that's concentrating on this.
I'm trying to find the difference in revenue. So I've got it in the Europa League and Champions League. So I've got
It. It's a £20 million difference.
If we get to the quarterfinals of the Europa League, it's a £20 million difference.
And if we don't...
If we don't, it's less.
Don't get scientific, you pal, right?
If we get to the Europa League semi-finals, it's only a £15 million difference. But that's just in UEFA prize money.
So
just
if
we
charge the same ticket prices as the charges for the Champions League, we'll be pretty well off.
See, let's
the same money. Yeah. There's people talking about cancelling their home ticket scheme stuff right now. This guy's on Twitter and on the huddleboard now saying, I've already done it. Now, I don't know where they have or not. But people are up in arms. I'm not paying the money for Europa League for them not to spend it.
Oh, no. I don't think they will sell out Europa League games. Maybe, I suppose, if the tickets become available, then the
depends
people...
Depends what
they
get. Depends what the draw is.
Occasionally.
It depends on a lot of things.
It also depends on the pricing.
Because that Europa League music is so motivating when it comes on.
Yeah. Does anybody even know what it's called?
No, I don't know what it's called. And I think they'll charge £30 a ticket.
That's all you pay?
£30 a ticket?
£30 a ticket? I guarantee you they'll be charging us more than £30 a ticket.
Let's see who's right. Pin this, clip this.
I think it'll be £40 a ticket. It was £39 for last Wednesday. I think they'll peg it at that. Because what would it be? £49 for Champions League?
So in terms of what we getting back to what we're going to spend, so we've got the Antwerp guy, name escapes me, £4 million. So that's not player number one.
Balakshiwa, is it?
We've got the on loan guy from South America, so that's player number two. So I reckon we might spend maybe another 10-12 million. top of that.
Yeah.
Right back, right winger, centre forward.
Who knows?
So not
look at Johnny Kenny.
Well,
don't blame the people that aren't good enough. They don't pick themselves.
Oh, I'm not blaming them. I'm blaming the board for thinking that it's good enough to go into a Champions League qualifier with these players.
But then, as I say, you could have made a rafty signings. And you know, you might, like, it's a gamble whether you make signings or don't make signings.
I know, but see, if you spend more money, you get a better chance. The odds are more in your favour than if you spend less money.
Well,
I don't mean if you
gave the lie to that by spending 26 million.
£3 million. No, I'm not saying you buy 15 players at £3 million. But see, if you buy 3 players at £15 million, you've got a better chance. Because all the statistics show the higher the wage bill, the more successful the team. Right? That's just basic. We all know that, right? So I accept there's no guarantees in football. You could buy a guy and he's a world beater and he gets a broken leg in his first game and he's out for 6 months, right? Look at Jota, right? We're all delighted he's back. He's out after a couple of weeks. These things happen. But generally speaking, over the course of a season, over the course of a few years, if you spend and invest in the team, you will get a better return than if you don't. Agreed?
You would think so, but as I say, it's kind
of... No, sorry. There's no think so. That is a matter of fact.
Over the course of seasons...
That is a matter of fact.
Things revert to the mean. That's what we spoke about earlier. Things will, all things being equal, the team that spends the most money does the best. Look at Man City.
Yeah, but I'm a great believer in that by and large. So, but as I say, Celtic have shaken my confidence in so many things.
Because we've not spent enough money. Spending
26 million last season, I would rather see Dan Murray than Austin Trusty. I don't know if Engels will ever have a place, and Adamita's just in the wrong movie.
Just basic customer service stuff, because all they're interested in, because they've got a banker who with a 34% shareholding who runs the place, and he's got a lawyer, an accountant, and another accountant as the chairman, chief executive, and finance director. Obviously, you want an accountant as a finance director running it. And they are only interested in return on investment. They'd have no concept about improving the customer experience on match day. No concept. If you challenge them on anything about some really simple thing. For me, I always remember going round looking at somewhere with a guy, old guy called John Watterson. Anyone who's interested in this will know Paul Watterson was part of the Wiseman Group, and his dad, John Watterson, famous in the Scots, used to go around, and I remember he's looking at buying a hotel for a couple of million quid, and I just happened to be with him. Paul's talking money. All John's doing is looking whether there's dust on top of the light switches, because he's looking at, does this business care about the customer experience, not the pounds, shillings and pence? Because the customer experience will tell him whether the goodwill of the company has any value to it or not, right? We do not care about the customer experience. So as I say, really simple example of that is 30 years ago, Fergus builds the stand and he's got two lifts, one at either end to go up. My dad, 83, reasonably fit and healthy, but wants to take the lift now. It takes 4 people, that lift. It says 8 on the thing. It sometimes can take 5, but often the alarm goes off and it takes 4 people to take up. So you queue for half an hour in that lift, outside, in the rain, because they couldn't give a shit about the customer experience of evolving and changing and uplifting the customer experience. And that then, to me, is symptomatic of the way that they see the club. As you know, Andrew, we've got a tent outside for 20 years. I've written about it on our site that we might as well, a tent for when we're playing big games. Why? We might as well have a fucking big giant neon sign that says, we do not belong here.
Do you know the bizarre thing about the tent that used to always get me? I don't know if it was the same towards the end of my time, but it used to have chandeliers in it, right? You know, it was obviously like they'd hired
it's a wedding. From some
a wedding thing, you know, yeah. a gazebo.
And it's not soundproofed, like any tent. It's not soundproofed. So the audio of that is shit because you've got all the people walking about outside.
It's freezing at times as well, man.
It's freezing. It's got that dampness that a tent's got in it.
Yeah.
We've had it for 20 years. going, I was looking at something nearby to Celtic Park for work. So, of course, I then went across. I was on Google Earth looking at Celtic Park. And you know how now with Google Earth, you can go back to 1945 for aerial images. So I went back on that, look at that, and see how little we've developed. You can see how little we've developed the infrastructure to improve the customer experience of the supporters in the last 20 years since the stadium was built.
No, I know, it's appalling. And Google Earth, could I go back to the kind of early 90s and see myself with hair? No.
It's not that good.
See, you are that though, right? See, when you talk about customer experience, about the lifts and about the infrastructure and stuff, ultimately, what the customer wants is to be entertained by the team on the park. They want the best possible players. See if they were to say, listen, we can put 100 million into a new stand, and that main stand, or we can put 100 million into a team. Nobody is voting, except for the folk that sit in the main stand, is voting for that main stand. They're voting for it because they want the best quality on the team, on the pitch, and they've not done that.
My point is it's the little things that are emblematic of the bigger attitude.
Yes.
I'm not disagreeing with anything you've said, because it's all part of the underlying culture of contempt is a strong word for them. Indifference at best to what we're experiencing.
But no, I think contempt was the. I think you were right the first time.
I don't even know if they care enough to have contempt. Is my point? Do you know what I mean? I just think contempt is an emotion that requires a bit of energy. It's just who cares? How can we change that? They've got a season ticket money. You know, people are going to pay the home ticket scheme. We have the only sort of we've got a large number of small shareholders who we can't immobilise, because a huge number of small shareholders don't want to engage with the vehicle for small shareholders, which is the trust. For whatever reason, they don't want to do that. So, what's the long term solution here? This hasn't changed in over a decade. What's going to change? Are we going to need to go back to Ronnie Dyla stage where the upper tier of the Rangers end is empty before anybody starts to pay attention? And then if we do that, then the inevitable downsizing comes in. So we're kind of trapped as a support. And maybe that's just the modern football fan generally.
Yeah, maybe they will, but do you think Newcastle want to be owned by, well, mind you, with what we saw in Newcastle, maybe they do. But do you think there's so many supporters and so many clubs can't abide their ownership structures? Look at Spurs fans with Levy.
Most fans just want owners who plough cash in and make them successful. Football has no morals in general. People just want to win. And if they're winning, couldn't give a shit whether the money comes from Qatar, Dubai, Saudi Arabia. I'm not saying all supporters, obviously. But
most of them. Man City and all that, the Gallagher brothers going on about, what about all these other ones that own these football clubs and now everybody's getting on at us? Remember they used to kind of feel put upon because people used to talk about their oil fund wealth?
I just think everything I was saying was just because it's emblematic of, it's about, does that give us a return on investment? So what's the risk profile of spending that money to achieve that level? Is there sufficient uplift? So again, if the differential, if we think we could achieve on the budget we roughly have, we could achieve last eight of the Europa League, for argument's sake, and doing something half decent last 16 in the Champions League would get us an extra 30 million. But the difference in what we would need to spend in the team is 25 million, for argument's sake. They might then say, well, the risk reward's not sufficient there.
By the way, don't take Europa League lightly.
They could
screw that up right royally.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, actually, the big thing for Europa League is we will have another Glasgow team in the same competition as us, as a benchmarking position.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know what would be, what could make the season? Getting Rangers in the quarter final and humping them home and away. That would make me feel better about what happened tonight.
And I think Eddie's point about the defining, obviously everybody's really pissed off tonight. It could be very different if we, over the next, between now and January, we beat Rangers twice, win the League Cup, and are doing well in the Europa League. Finish 15th, 10th in the league, or something. You know, finish in a decent position in the league. And I'm not defending that. I'm just saying that supporters will have a very different outlook come February if we finish. Say we finished 8th in the Europa League, beating Rangers twice, 15, 20 points clear in the league. Supporters will have a very different attitude because supporters are fickle.
Right. Well, I mean, so are teams fickle. This is much the same team as we thought could put up a real fist there after watching how they performed against Bayern Munich.
Anyway,
in terms of Europa League, just to try and make the best of it, who have we got? Who's going to be in it? Is there anybody decent? Is it? Let's see. Europa League. Aston Villa, Bologna, Celta, Freiburg, Dynamo Zagreb, Go Ahead Eagles, Lille, Lyon, Nottingham Forest, Porto, Real Betis, Roma, Stuttgart. Is that get the juices flowing?
Yeah, there's some decent. I mean, look who Celtic played last year. Young boys.
Slovan Bratislava.
I mean, Atalanta weren't one of the.
Even getting the Italian team, it wasn't sexy.
No. Roma are a bigger name than Atalanta, even if they're not as necessary.
I mean, actually, if we get to the Europa League, well, we are in the Europa League. All of it.
Yay!
Hey, that's what we've forgotten about tonight. We qualified for a European
football after Christmas.
The only thing I now want is, I want us to try and win it. I want us to go really far in the competition we're in it.
Yeah, I'd love that too, but what
do you think the board wants though? Like, let's just be, it's going to be very expensive in terms of travelling all over Europe if we were to win it to get out of the final. So let's just have a decent run in the group stages, no matter mug of ourselves, and then bow out gracefully before those expensive playoffs. That'll be the plan.
The bonuses. Do you know that was one of the things that done for Murray, the EBTs, when they got to the 2008 UEFA, I think it was then, the UEFA Cup final? Because the bonuses they had to pay that, so they had to pay them through the EBTs.
Were you aware of what was going on behind the scenes in terms of the Champions League bonuses when we stopped at 10? See, in terms of we're playing Zagreb, and remember Reggie Blinker went and crapped it against the goalie and stuff, that classic moment. Remember there was all the talk about they'd fallen out with Fergus about the bonuses, and they weren't happy with what they're getting, and did he give the bonus money away when they never qualified?
He gave it away to sick kids. Because I got in trouble because he brought in this young fella with leukemia. You know, he was no hair. And he had the big check, and he gave quarter of a million pound. Tom Boyd, they had an agent, this really kind of greasy agent that the players were using. And the guy phoned me up on a Sunday night and was trying to get the scuttlebutt about what was happening and all this kind of stuff. But when Fergus did that, it made me feel queasy. And I actually, Fergus came in and he was talking, and I said, do you think a stunt like that, do you think it's in good taste? And he wasn't happy. He wasn't happy. Because I was at the Evening Times by then, you know. Because I was over in Zagreb at that time. I've never seen a player get racially abused like Reggie Blinker that night.
Really?
It was horrendous. And I've never been to a nightclub later on. It was in a gazebo. It was actually, maybe that's where Celtic got this.
Was it a press conference?
I've never seen so many beautiful women. Anyway, that's like, sorry, I'm really like, I'm trying to cheer myself up here.
You've been a bit of a rabbit hole there. You started it. Morning about Champions League.
You started it, but like Fergus, I thought that was low. That was low. You know, because you're deliberately going. I spoke to Peter McLean after it. I said, I don't know how you can live with yourselves doing that. He said, no, they wanted, the York Hill wanted, it was the York Hill sick kids they gave it to. Okay. Said they wanted to come because they said pictures give them visibility and exposure, and so it might encourage other people So they need those kind of pictures. I wasn't convinced. And, you know, I'll never forget, because after the press conference finished, the Sun guy, Roger Bailey, if you remember him, he came up to me and went, "Oh, I'm so glad you were here, Andrew." He said, "I was trying to build up to asking that question, but I couldn't quite bring myself to ask it, and you did." God, doing the Sun's dirty work for them. It was an unseemly episode, start to finish.
And I thought the unseemly stuff was going to be about the Zagreb nightclub as well. There you are.
Anyway,
I could tell another story about that, but I'm not going to tell about that tonight.
Yeah, we've had an hour and 40 minutes of rambling and not even really talking about the game, because nothing really happened in the game.
How could you talk about that game? We had to watch that game. Was that not enough for anybody?
That was bad enough.
If anybody's any doubt, it was crap. There you go. That's us. We've given you a full match report.
Yeah.
As we said, 50 Shades is shite.
Yeah. Anyway.
And it was like, you know what I mean? Masochism. You know, there was a lot of whips and all that. Oh, that was another.
That was another year we got knocked out of the Champions League.
That was Ajax. Anyway, right.
Do you know, a mate of mine coming back from Seville, driving up, and they were tired, and you know, in the middle of nowhere, and they pull into what they get to this place looks like a great hotel, and then they realised, you know, they go in and they realise it's a brothel because every room had someone in it. Anyway,
I think that was Slovakia, but that was another one. Like, I'm not okay. Kasice. I remember being at the Hacienda in Kasice, and it was 50p to get in. I puked up on the dance floor, but that was another story. Anyway, enough. Sorry.
Right.
My full disclosure's gone too far.
Should we do another podcast before the Rangers game?
Yes.
Should, if people can tell us whether or not they will accept it.
Right, okay. Right, we'll do another podcast before the Rangers game. So we'll not do our predictions for that. And I'll bring this to a close at an hour and 16. It's as long as the game.
But hopefully it's a lot more entertaining than the game
would. they're using the we game, hope. They're going to... They're playing it to people in Guantanamo Bay. right.
Well,
anyway.
God bless you guys, and good night. And I hope you get a better sleep than I will.
Let's go win the Europa League.
Exactly. Yeah.
Good. Let's go.
Bring me sunshine in your smile.
We hope you enjoyed that podcast. There will be more along soon. Please share the joy of Celtic Underground. Rate us wherever you can find us on your podcast provision. And also subscribe to thecelticunderground.substack.com. As you'll be aware, there are two types of subscription. There's free subscription, where you get a certain amount of content delivered directly to your email address. And then there's a paid-for subscription, where you get even more content delivered directly to your email address as and when it comes out. Anyway, enough of me. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. And this is me, Harry Brady, saying good night and God bless. Good night.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.